So we have TVs in the studio.
Yeah.
And I just looked up to see that I guess Toronto General Hospital had a robbery.
Robbed a hospital?
It was just horrible. But they... Then I'm like, what, did I just see that correctly? They stole colonoscopy cameras? Wonder where they put them in order to steal them.
Well, enjoy your lunch, everyone. How are you?
Good to see you, Gord.
Yeah, you too, Pooley. How are you?
Terrific. You have anything in your hands? Nope.
Nope.
Not in my hands.
There was the guy smuggling gold out of the mint, and I guess that was kind of a different thing.
Seriously, who steals? Anyways.
I watched the news all day yesterday. My tennis club burned down.
Is that your... Oh, so you're one of those she people?
No, it's actually quite affordable, not like the other ones. Yeah.
Well, I had read that that's 90-year-old tennis club, and I knew that it had produced a lot of champions, but I didn't know that you were a member.
I'm not one of them.
Badminton.
Alex Bruce, Canadian Olympian in badminton. He's a member there, yeah.
Well, you know what? Thank you for mentioning that, because a huge thank you to the firefighters who were battling that all day
Incredible.
Long.
Incredible.
And night.
Also, and also the police officers, and not that everyone wants to hear about this, but the staff... No one was injured at all. The staff got everyone else
Amazing.
Out quickly, which is terrific. So no loss of life. Mm-hmm. You know, the building's destroyed, but that you can get by that. But wow, I was taking a cab down to the ACC for the morning skate yesterday, and the cabbie said, "Sorry, I'm late, but there's a fire at Yonge and St. Clair." I said, "Oh yeah, where?" He said, "Well, just south of St. Clair, west of Yonge." I'm like, "Wait a minute."
You're like, so that's
put on CP24 on my phone and watch my tennis club burn. I said, "Oh, there's my locker right there." I guess
here's your racket right there.
I can't believe I left my Rolex in my locker yesterday.
So. Oh boy, that's the one thing that did not get damaged, probably.
No, it's not true. I don't have a Rolex, and there's nothing in my locker but dirty socks.
So welcome into Leafs Lunch. Andy Petrillo alongside Gord Miller, Dave Poulin.
Covering a lot of topics today already.
We've already covered all the ground.
Where the heck have you been?
Andy, I have this job thing and I got to work.
It's BS. That's all I have to say. But how nice of you to show up after a Leafs win. This is good. See, now we have good things to talk about. But
maybe I'm the key.
Maybe you are. But
I don't think so. I'm going to say no to that.
You're looking for a piece of paper, Gord?
I am.
Gord wants to be the number one student.
Right here. Yeah, good.
So before we get into the Leafs talk.
Now I got to throw the whole thing out because.
I don't know what you... Stop it, children. So before we get into the Leafs talk, we have to just address the biggest story I feel right now in hockey. And no, it's not the whole Michel Therrien, Claude Julien thing. It's what the heck was Antoine Vermette thinking?
So I thought Dave Reed did a great job last night on That's Hockey Tonight, talking about showing what led to it. Vermette was getting tossed a lot from the faceoff circle.
By one guy?
By Chandra Alfonso. Okay. He had a running thing going with the linesman Chandra Alfonso last night. Was getting tossed, was losing draws. He had just lost a defensive zone draw cleanly after Alfonso was backing him off. Then out to the blue line they go. Alfonso's moving around again. He loses that draw cleanly. He gets mad and slashes him. There is no excuse for that. And it's an automatic 10-game suspension, to be honest. Tom Lysiak got 20, right, for tripping the linesman?
Yeah, slew-footing the linesman, yeah. Mark Pair.
Right, so... If I'm the Ducks, I'd be very careful here. And I will say this carefully. I don't believe the Calgary Flames have gotten much benefit of the doubt from the officials since the Dennis Weidman incident with Don Henderson. Henderson hasn't worked since and probably won't work again. And I would say I don't have evidence. I don't have hard facts to prove it. But I can tell you this. Watching Calgary Flames games and you know, talking to people around the league, Calgary doesn't get many breaks from the officials.
No. So your question is, are officials human? Yes, they are.
Of course they are. So if I'm the Ducks, Vermette better apologize right away, and the Ducks better move on from it. If you kick up a fuss like Weidman did and like the Flames did, you could be bringing yourself a world of hurt.
It's very interesting because even one of our producers is saying, well, he just sort of tapped him. That's not 10 games. Absolutely no. Yeah. That is automatically 10 games, and if you challenge it, it could very well go up.
Yeah, to be honest with you, you have to remember who your audience is, right? It's you've got kids in the stands, you've got young people watching, families. Officials almost go like a fan. If you slashed a fan, right? If you slashed a spectator, there'd be that kind of outcry. You cannot, under any circumstances, physically abuse an official. There's no excuse for
it. And I agree because there are larger... Are refs wrong? Do they make wrong calls? Yes, we'll discuss one that happened last night in the Leafs game. But it doesn't matter because there's a bigger message being sent when you allow someone to lay a hand or a stick, in this case, on an official. Now, I've said this before. The other sport that I absolutely adore is soccer. And one thing that really upsets me about that sport, other than the dive, I can handle the diving to an extent, but that is the one sport where players get up in the official's face and it ticks me off to no end. It is so disrespectful. That's what bothers me about the sport of soccer, and I am so happy that hockey doesn't go that route. So they need to they need to come down hard. Yeah. You cannot touch an official ever, ever, ever.
The one thing that's changed in hockey is the amount you can say to an official, because it seems like now coaches almost never get tossed, right? Mike Sullivan got tossed for Pittsburgh. I think that's the only coach, right, this year that's been tossed. Glenn Sather got tossed 7 times in 1 year, including, you were there, the Pelly Lindbergh Memorial game. The Flyers' first home game the year after the fall after Pelly Lindbergh had died, they had the big ceremony, and 5 minutes into the game, Glenn Sather got tossed by Don Koharski, I think it was. Coaches used to get thrown out of games, and players used to get thrown out of games all the time for physically abusing officials, for verbally abusing officials. That almost never happens now.
It's the conversation you have, the conversation you're describing with Vermette last night, Antoine Vermette, happens all the time between a good official and a good centerman. Because I'll skate around with a guy before the period starts and say, hey, you're killing me here. You're absolutely killing me. You're not giving me time. You're not letting me get set, whatever it may be. And those conversations, I think, happen less now, Gordon. I think it hurts the game. The casual conversation, the relationship conversation.
There's not as much interaction in terms of, hey, what about this, what about
good
that?
Good conversation.
But there's more of, you know, like Mike Babcock, what he said last night, and I read his lips, what he said last night to Dean Morton after the penalty shot call would have got you tossed 20 years ago.
So did it get another penalty call 10 seconds later against Nazem Kadri?
Well, you do wonder. I mean, there's a famous story about a football coach with a headset on saying, I can't believe we didn't get a call. And the assistant coach upstairs saying, well, you've been calling him a stupid so-and-so for the last 2.5 hours, so maybe that's the reason.
Well, and so remember we talked last week when we were discussing the Gustav Nyquist, who, by the way, has his hearing at 2 p.m. today. And I had said that in a situation like that, like a controversial situation like that, I was okay with the player, A, not being made available, or at least being made available 30 minutes after the fact. So Anaheim did not make Vermette available. And I think that was a good call, because he could have said something so dumb.
He, if I'm the Ducks, he puts out a statement today saying, I
couldn't be more apologetic.
I unreservedly apologize. Mm-hmm. There's no excuse for what I did. I'll accept whatever punishment I get. Because there's more than just this suspension to deal with. You, the respect of the officials is paramount. And look, officiating is a very dangerous profession. You know, we don't hear about it. Three officials have been out long-term this year, you know, with injuries. Steve Cazzari, Chris Rooney, and Dave Jackson have all been injured in games this year and have missed. Dave Jackson's been out for 2 months now. It's a grueling, difficult profession. The puck's flying around. You're breaking up fights.
They
got no gear on. For someone like, and Vermette lost the draw, paused, and then stepped towards him and slashed him. It wasn't a you know, in the motion of trying to win the faceoff. He took a step towards him and slashed him. The Ducks need to handle this and just say, sorry, lost my mind, will never happen again.
Quick question, Gordon, on the Nyquist thing. If you are advising Nyquist, are you not telling him to go to the hearing so at least he can show remorse and be remorseful in person rather than on the phone?
Yeah, I think
see my face, see,
yeah,
I'm really sorry, that was really dumb. It was really bad. I'll never do it again in person.
Yeah, I think he needs to, and to Andy's point, he needs to walk back what he said after the game where my stick got stuck.
Would you rather not do that live than on
the
phone?
That's what I mean, yeah. He needs to walk that back, and I think that walking back is more effective in person.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. I made a comment on Monday that I would like to see all players treated equally in terms of perpetrators and victims. So I would like to picture what would happen if Gustav Nyquist did that to
a superstar,
Connor McDavid. Mm-hmm. If you pitchforked a guy in the mouth. Now, people say, well, you know, Brandon Dubinsky only got one game for cross-checking Sidney Crosby in the head. I mean deliberately pitchforking someone in the mouth. So let's pretend that happened to Connor McDavid and say, what would the suspension be then? And that's where I think, you know, and this argument that Gustav Nyquist is not that kind of player, well, he is now.
Once you've done it, you've done it.
All right, good news. Toronto Maple Leafs. So they're coming off a win. It's a 7-1 win over the New York Islanders. First time this season the Leafs have scored 7 goals. We've seen them score 6. So the offense has been found. The offense still exists. And Defense.
She's awesome, isn't she?
Defense was strong.
You are the queen of turning a snapshot into a movie.
What?
Like you take one.
Well, she's a diva, so the analogy totally makes sense.
So you take one picture, that's a movie.
Yeah.
So the offensive problems are solved. Everything's fine.
Solved.
Seven goals, done.
We're good.
Okay.
Anderson, Vezina. No, I'm kidding. But it was it's a good game. And you know what? It was a big game because it was against the New York Islanders. This was a team that was 1 point behind them. This was a team
that came back last week.
That they hadn't been able to beat.
Had thumped them October. Yeah.
Everything was good.
Yeah.
So how about we just right away, in a 7-1 victory, get to the grades of the game.
It's time to find out who made the grade. This is Leafs Lunch. Grades of the game.
So I think for a while now I've been predictable. But I know I'm getting predictable.
Define a while.
When Gord walks in, who, by the way, and I told you, Pooley, he likes to send his grades in at like 7 in the morning when the rest of us.
Smart guy.
Are still sleeping. But he now knows who not to take. Because that's how predictable I am. He knows the one guy not to take. As we get to the grades of the game, brought to you by Borrowwell.com, Canada's leading online provider of personal loans and free credit scores, Anderson. I'm the goalie hugger, and I'm going to give him...
Does he know this?
...an A+.
Does Frederick Anderson know this?
Yes.
That I'm a goalie hugger? Well, he's probably figured it out by now. I just, you know what it is?
If he's seen his report card, he knows, Gord. He's got straight A's.
He's teacher's pet. See, this is the thing. I can't be part of the goalie union because I didn't play. So I'm the kid on the outside that desperately wants to be part of the goalie union. So the best thing I can do is be a goalie hugger.
Secretary. You could be like the, you could be the treasurer.
And I was telling Pooley, you weren't here for that conversation yet, that ever since I was a little girl, always wanted to be a redhead. Always, always, always.
So a redheaded goalie?
It's like in my wheelhouse. Bridget Nielsen in Red Sonja. That's my alter ego.
You know, you could be a redhead in like 2 hours. They have the technology to do that.
I want it to be like a real one. No, because my great-grandmother was redhead. I thought I'd get it. Never did. Made my mother buy a $300 redheaded wig for me when I was 6 years old. You can't make this stuff up. Frederick Anderson gets an A+.
Second period last night, he was tremendous.
He was so good.
That was important for him, important for his team. That was a statement stretch of hockey for him. He was tremendous. He was as good last night.
But at 1-0, at 2-0, at critical points. Mm-hmm. And that's what you look at. You don't look at the 7-1 game. You evaluate him at exact critical moments, and he was very good at those points.
And I'm convinced he would have gotten the shutout if it wasn't for, here's my next grade, an F going to Dean Morton, who called the penalty shot. See, this is how you get at officials. You don't whack at them. You just give them an F. In grades of the game. And in the spirit
of
Valentine's
Day. 20 years as an official, Dean Morton's going to brush off your...
He's over
he
it.
He probably, yeah. he probably is over it already. But I will say this. It. In the spirit of Valentine's Day yesterday, that was a love tap. What was that? That is not a hook. That is not anything that warranted a penalty shot.
Yep, he made a mistake.
Because Chimera fanned on the shot.
Yeah.
Had Chimera not fanned on the shot... To me, there would have been no call.
Yeah.
He thought something caused the fan on the shot.
So when Ray
predicted what that
caused.
So
when Ray Ferraro said between the benches, that's going to be a penalty shot, my first reaction was, what is?
Yeah.
Like, so Anderson,
you thought you'd miss something almost.
Fran Anderson quick up the puck, right? So the Leafs were going the other way, and the whistle went, and I couldn't, the crowd was pretty loud last night. I couldn't hear the whistle. And Ray said, that's going to be a penalty shot. I thought, did someone shoot a stick at, like, did someone shoot a stick at him? Did someone throw their stick at him? What happened there? And then we saw the play. Hey, look, you know what? I'm not excusing Morton. He made a mistake.
Players and you don't review those. Like, refs are not looking at video
make
to
mistakes,
review that
coaches
call.
Make,
oh, he would be evaluated on that by his peers.
For sure. Absolutely. He'll be evaluated.
After the fact.
Yeah, after for sure.
No, no, but I'm saying that, in the heat of the moment, you're not doing that.
And for them, that can affect playoff assignments. I mean, all of that. Oof. So, I mean, you know, officials, I give them some leeway.
He may have got a grade worse than that than you just gave him.
Yeah, Stephen Walker might have given him worse than enough.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so that can cost you, you know, and playoff not getting playoff assignments put you on the road to A, cost you money, and B, put you on the road to not being in the league anymore. 3 straight years of playoff assignments gives them the right to dismiss.
You're being evaluated. Yeah.
See, I think what stung too was then the call against Kadri right
call,
after.
Yeah.
So you
he
can
gets
almost
no breaks.
Yeah,
he gets no breaks.
And you could almost argue he was being
earned.
At least he was being consistent.
Earned to get no breaks.
Yeah, it's taken him a long time. I think he deserves a break. He's a long way from what he was before.
Kadri.
But that reputation follows him around. Yeah.
Well, there you go. So those are my grades. So, see, I gave out an F.
Yeah, to someone who's not a Leaf.
Doesn't matter. All right, who wants to go next, Gord? Since you send yours in early?
I'll go next.
Or Pooley, you go next?
I'm going to take his two guys.
Veteran I move.
Matt Hunwick.
Ah, nice.
Scored a goal and an old-fashioned statistic, plus four.
Mm. Oh, plus minus is meaningless.
When you're plus four in a game, that means you were on the ice for four more goals than you were on against. I don't care if it's ancient. I don't care if it's historic. I don't care if it's a dinosaur statistic. He was on the ice four more times when his team scored than when the team with other colored jerseys scored.
You know why plus minus matters? Because it matters to players and coaches.
It does.
So you could analytics people can argue all you want. Plus minus matters because it matters to the players.
It does, absolutely.
If the players don't care about it, then we will care about it, but they still do.
To this day, in men's hockey, when you're changing and there's only one guy to change with, and your team's going to score, you drag your leg and you chirp them and say, I got the plus there. Yeah. To this day.
For sure.
You do. Or sorry about the minus, although you had nothing to do with it. But Hunwick was solid, and he's been a guy that's drawn a lot of conversation over the year. That's a real solid game. My second grade comes in two parts. That was a B+, by the way.
Okay.
I'm not an Andy grader, Gord. You got it. Like B+ is a really
room,
good.
Got some room up
B plus is a really really good.
I have a teacher's pet.
So Hunwick got a really good B+.
Yeah.
Austin Matthews got a B+, and it came in two parts. His first two periods were so good.
Yeah.
He did a number of little things. So little detail. He's coming through the neutral zone on Brock Nelson.
Yeah.
He looks up. He sees it's Brock Nelson. Rather than try to beat him, he just skates around him.
Yeah.
Like, that's a smart, smart play, and an observant play. Now, I could ask other guys on the ice if they knew that was a forward out there, and they would have no clue.
Right.
And he looked up, and he saw the left shot, Brock Nelson. Rather than try and put it through his feet, which a forward loved because he'd stop that, skated around him. And just little details like that.
Yeah.
And then he scores two goals in the third period. So it's a two-part B+. And would have had a B+ without scoring the two goals. The two goals were, he is, as Craig termed him in his draft year, a complete elite centerman.
Yeah. This is
27 goals.
This guy is, I mean, he's a star. He is going to be, I don't want to put this on him, but he's going to be one of the top five players in the league.
Like ever?
Would you call them?
Or
would
this
you call
year?
Them? No, he's going to be considered over the next 10 years of his career. Mm-hmm. He's going to be considered one of the top five players.
He
in the
has
league
that
year.
Chance. Yes, he does.
Okay. He does. He's an elite centerman, and that's so hard to find.
And you know, you look at Laine's got 26 goals that are loud.
How
flashy,
about another hat trick for
unbelievable,
him?
Unbelievable! Yeah. Another hat trick.
Great and terrific player.
But Matthews has 27 goals that are somehow quiet, more reserved, more functional, more, I don't know.
And playing with two guys who almost never score.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's something we discuss at
Connor Brown,
right?
More so.
Yeah.
He has the ability to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Zach Hyman will always be the player he is.
All right, Mr. Gord.
I'm going to take Freddie Anderson and Dean Morton. sorry. I couldn't.
Not
resist.
Funny. Although you did take one of my grades. Because one of the guys you're grading is somebody I was going to give
Josh Levo.
There you go. That's him.
By the way, Andy has all 20 guys that she was going to grade before you chose your two guys.
Somebody has to wake up early.
You took my answers. Always here. Josh Levo, I'm going to give him an A. And I think that for two reasons. Great goal last night. An important one. The first goal for Toronto. The Leafs have scored the first goal in 21 of their 26 wins. So, getting the first one, especially when they've been outplayed badly in the first period. But also, just for perseverance. You know, we've seen Frank Corrado sit for long times. We've seen other players, Martin Marincin sitting for a while. Josh Levo sat and sat and sat, was hurt for a while. To keep his confidence, to keep going, and to play the way he did last night, drove that fourth line. And the fourth line gave them good minutes last night.
Very good.
Like, very good minutes last night. I thought he was terrific. Nazem Kadri gets an A, too. Not just for the goal, not just for taking his penalty and not, freaking out about it. For the first two periods especially, John Tavares didn't get a sniff when Nazem Kadri was on the ice. It was incredible. The only time Tavares really got scoring chances, Kadri wasn't on the ice. And Tavares is a unique player because Sidney Crosby, Sidney Crosby is going to beat you with his skating and his skill. John Tavares is going to beat you when he gets a half a second and an inch of daylight. That's all he needs. And if you can blanket him 99% of the time. You give him half a second and an inch of daylight, and he'll beat you. And he never got a sniff against Kadri. I thought that was a terrific performance.
Yeah, Kadri rises to the occasion. And we've seen him in interviews saying he always wants the toughest assignment. He does not back down from it.
And he got it last night. And Tavares is a handful, and he was terrific.
Yeah, and I believe Levo will score at the NHL level. And there's a reason they didn't want to put him on waivers and send him down, because right. other people feel that way too. Yeah. But I look back at his first shift, and across the board, their start last night, every player's first shift was good.
Play fast, play right.
And you look at how a team starts well.
I'm wondering when that gets
dropped. Because it may be 4 minutes in that you get your first shift. And it was good for Levo.
Yeah.
And he got another one.
A goal and two assists, 3-point night for him. Wonder if we see him move up in the lineup. We can discuss that a little later on in the show. Pierre LeBrun is going to be joining us in studio.
Yes.
Come on.
Woo-hoo. That's coming up next on Leafs Lunch. As you continue to listen, don't go anywhere. By the way, Grades of the Game brought to you by Borrowell.com. Do you know your financial grade with digital innovator Borrowell.com? You can check your credit score for free and get approval on a personal loan up to $35,000. Get graded today at Borrowell.com. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back into Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050, streaming online on TSN 4. Andy Petrillo alongside Gord Miller, Dave Poulin, and joining us in studio, our TSN hockey insider, Pierre LeBrun, right. who's I'm working away on his phone there. What are you doing?
He's working.
His hockey insider brought to you
but
by Finance
It. I'm trying to look into why the Flames signed Matt Barkowski to a
what?
PTO.
Say what? What's happening?
The Flames signed Matt Barkowski to a PTO.
Did I not say that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, she said what? So
you think
repeating.
It's a prelude to a move?
Well, I think they may, if they like what they see, they may end up signing him to a real NHL contract, like a two-way deal, and that will be their last checkbox.
Right.
It'll be a guy they can expose in
the expansion draft
because he meets the games played requirement from the last 2 years. I know.
It's
not the headline of the day.
It's one big chess game before this expansion.
Well, it's going to be wild, and it's going to get crazier because the chessboard's going to change because Vegas is going to make a ton of trades. Vegas is going to make all kinds of deals with teams. I won't take player X, but you give me a pick and player Y.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. And those calls have already started. George McPhee is getting calls from other teams.
And he can make deals
laying
at the
groundwork.
Mm-hmm. They can make deals at the deadline. Vegas can.
Yeah. And
well, it depends
even
on
if
they
the payment's
final
not made.
Franchise payment.
The payment has to
they
be
have
made.
To make
yeah.
The...
Assuming the
show me the money.
Assuming the payment.
Gord, assuming. I like your.
I'm going to assume that Vegas hasn't gone this far down the road to not. Just at the last. You know what? No, we're not going to do this.
Uh-uh. And I think we talked about this last week, Annie, but the type of trades that they will be able to make are either signing college free agents right out of the gates, or you acquire a draft pick or a prospect from an NHL team in exchange for.
But no one,
not
but no,
taken a certain
but no one who's playing in the NHL this year,
correct,
and not playing in the American League, or can they be playing in the American League?
They can't because those guys can be called up.
Right,
so we're talking junior guys.
A signed junior player could be traded to Vegas.
Yes, a contract.
Yeah.
Okay, and there was speculation. There's going to continue to be speculation over who Vegas is going to take as their coach because they just don't have one, and you can scratch Claude Julien off of that.
Yes,
although many people were saying that he probably would have been too expensive anyways, just given what Foley kept saying about what they wanted to spend. Who knows?
Right. But they wanted to talk to him. I can tell you that. I mean,
of course.
It's an interesting philosophical question, though, because as you're building a team simultaneous to a coach's style, or you're building it and then hiring the coach to the style of the team you've been able to put together.
I'll be shocked if it's not Gerard Gallant. He ticks all the boxes for them. Worked with young players, won a Memorial Cup in St. John, coached a young group in Florida, known as a communicator, known as a guy who encourages young players and lets them play. For me, Gallant takes
he'd be the guy I would hire. They've already interviewed him. I think they've spoken or will speak with Jack Capuano, and I think there's a third candidate in mind that I don't know who it is. So I think it's right now a list of three.
Like the lightest,
which
brightest
could change because
AHL coach or that type of profile?
My guess is it has to be a guy with NHL head coaching experience. So,
well, who's out there? I mean, are you talking Bob Hartley?
Yeah, I don't know who.
Are you saying that with a smirk?
No, because I don't know.
Oh.
It's been bugging me because I think
he smirks. He doesn't know.
So like,
Andy,
who knows? It may be someone who is currently employed elsewhere. Who knows?
Right.
I was with this group last night, shortly before 5 o'clock, when the Julien news broke, and they were going live on SportsCenter, and he and Drags and Bobby Mack wheeling and dealing. At that point, I mean, they are burning.
Oh yeah,
those phone lines.
Everyone on speed dial.
Were you as surprised as everyone else, Pierre?
I was, Gord, because you know I know how close Michel Therrien and Marc Bergevin are.
Yep.
I mean, this goes beyond the coach-GM relationship.
Right.
I remember the Winter Classic a couple of nights before the Winter Classic game at Foxborough a year and a half ago, walking into a restaurant and Therrien and Bergevin were having dinner together. They spent a lot of time together. They were buddies. Mm-hmm. But one of the things Bergevin said in French during his news conference was that this decision wasn't based on what I wanted as Mark Bergevin the person. This is what was needed for the Montreal Canadiens, which is an interesting distinction that he made, which I think what he's saying is, if it was just up to me and I could protect my buddy, maybe I would have one more time. But he obviously felt his duty as GM of this original six franchise that he felt, you know, change was needed. Most notably, though, when asked about, you know, did you make this change because Julian was suddenly available, he said, that's not the main reason. Change was probably needed regardless, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. And explains why, as Bob McKenzie tweeted last night, why the Habs also sought permission from the Florida Panthers to speak with Gerald Gallant, who it never ended up happening. Gerald Gallant did not hear from the Habs, yeah. But nevertheless, permission was sought.
But was it simultaneous to asking Boston for Julian?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Because Gerard Gallant doesn't speak French, to my knowledge. I don't believe he does.
Just a few words from good old PEI, but no, he's not fluent.
I'd be shocked if Montreal would go down the road where their general manager or their coach didn't speak at least passable French. I just don't know.
Unless they sought permission to eventually talk to him about an associate job, which he was before.
But
I don't think that would interest Gerard Gallant.
If Mike Babcock was available, that might be a different thing, because Babcock, you know, lived in Montreal, but aside from that, I'd be shocked if Montreal went down that road. Sorry, can I just ask, what were the big takeaways you had from Bergevin's comments today?
Well, the first one was one we just talked about, that it looks like he was going to make this move regardless of Julian's availability. So he says. Number two, he made a point of saying he did not seek out player input before making this move. Number three, almost unprovoked, he mentioned Sergachev, their great prospect, on his own when asked about potential trades and saying, I'm not going to deal this kid. And I think there's a couple things happening there. I think he was tempering this very passionate market's expectations for March 1st, because we've been talking so much the last few weeks about Montreal.
And Matt Duchene, right?
Matt Duchene, Martin Hanzel, whatever. Sergachev would be more of the Duchene conversation. But I think he was trying to tell everyone, if I don't make a move, I still like this team. I think they got to make a move. I really do think they need help down the middle. But that's a takeaway for me, in that I think he was trying to calm down Habs fans in terms of what he's trying to do.
You know, the four teams in particular, let's remove Florida from this, but the recent coach and changes, you have to think there's four teams that are willing to make a move to support those coaches before March 1st.
Right.
You have to, because they've made a coaching change. They've all worked out so far with short bodies of work.
Yeah.
But those coaching changes will be supported as soon as they're identified.
And even though Duchene is a whole other level above Hanzel, completely different player, more talented, you know, he's a star. Matt Duchene's a star. Martin Hanzel is not a star. Oddly enough, I still think Hanzel's actually a better fit, if that makes any sense, because he's a 6'6" monster who, on their third line, would have specific responsibilities for Claude Julien in terms of matchups. Last Saturday night in Arizona, Hanzel was on Sidney Crosby and shut him down. I mean, that's what he does, and the Canadians are not big enough down the middle, and they're not good enough defensively down the middle. And I just feel like, even though Duchene is the guy that would come in and have a bigger impact overall, especially offensively, Hanzel's actually the guy that actually, like, the puzzle maker there. But the thing is, the price has to come down. There are other teams that like Martin Hanzel, a lot of teams, and I don't think Montreal wants to overspend.
Why would any general manager ever say that a certain player wouldn't be traded? Because my question back would be, so if Pittsburgh called you and said, we'll trade you Sidney Crosby for Sergachev, you wouldn't do it? Obviously, if the right deal comes along, Bergevin will trade anyone.
So, I mean, why
someone's not going to be traded?
To be fair, he specifically said...
Because he's lying.
Well, he specifically said he wouldn't trade Sergachev for a short-term fix.
Okay, so he's... Yeah.
So he's protected on the back
end.
There
is context there.
So let me ask you this, when it comes to the Leafs. And we're all anticipating a very quiet trade deadline, because we know the Leafs develop.
Never know.
You never know. Well,
this could have spiced
there's
things
that
up.
Smirk again. Why are you smirking?
Because he smirks.
I'm a happy person.
What do you know?
Can I not smile?
No. Okay. But let me ask you this, because I think I've been approaching this differently. I've been always asking, Are the Leafs looking? Are the Leafs making calls about a defenseman? Mm-hmm. Have you heard anything about anyone calling the Leafs about a certain player?
Mm-hmm.
Has that kind of been out there?
No, it's been quiet in part because Lula Morello threatens people. No, I'm just kidding.
The Lou father? That's why we call him
the Lou father. I'll never forget the story that came out from one Canucks source about the Bo Horvat, Corey Schneider deal, or trading for the for the ninth overall pick that became Bo Horvat. And someone from the Canucks said, Lou told us if this leaked out overnight, the deal was off.
Yeah.
And he wasn't kidding.
Joe LaPointe, the New York Times, once wrote, there was a game at Newark where the game was delayed for 15 minutes because there was water dripping from the ceiling. And Joe wrote, it was the first known leak in the 19-year administration.
That's good. That is really good.
That's clever.
Having said that, if the Leafs can improve in the back end, they will. Making the playoffs is important to them because they view it as a vehicle to help their long-term development of the young players. That the experience itself is actually a long-term game.
Their deals are going to be soft deals, right? I mean,
they're either going to make a soft rental deal for not much, like maybe a fourth-line center, or if there is that bigger trade for the young D, it's a trade they'd make in the summer anyway. Let's get better for next year.
Or Leick or McCulloch for late picks, just to pick up some draft picks.
Well, see, I just wondered if you're a team that you yourself are looking for a rental player because you want that extra push, would you call the Leafs about a JVR? Because that would be a guy who would help. I'm just wondering if they're getting calls like that.
Mm-hmm. Not that I'm aware of. Not that I'm aware of. And I don't think the Leafs feel that that they have to do anything.
Right.
They're in a great position.
So that's the starting point. But sometimes the deadline creates desperation where an opportunity suddenly arises that you didn't think would be there until June, but now it's there. It's there now because I'll give you an example. I'm not saying they're going to make a trade with the Anaheim Ducks, although that would be a fit for me because of all their young D.
Right.
What if Bob Murray of the Ducks gets to the deadline and realizes, their window is not open forever? I mean, he's done an amazing job building that team. Yeah. But some of their core guys, Kessler, Getzlaff, Perry,
you're making a run. The West is wide open.
The West is wide open.
They're as good as anybody.
If I can get a top six forward, an impact top six forward, they need a bit of an offensive boost, that team. For one of my D, do I not owe it to myself to fully explore that? And so I'm just saying. I'm not saying that's going to come Toronto's way, but it's the type of situation where Toronto could, I don't know if the word is exploit, but certainly look at as the pressure mounts towards March 1st.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious. Right, I'm really, really curious. Why are you passing notes? Like this?
What is Pooley, going on over
here? So Pooley shows up. He passes notes to Gord at the beginning of the show. Now he's passing notes off to you.
He's passing a tablet. What am I reading?
A broken tablet.
Oh, this thing here?
I don't know.
Oh, so Adam Oates? On the ice
so
and
it
Brassard.
Appears Adam Oates is on the ice and Brassard with a couple of the Habs players. Now, one thing to remember, that the Habs players are not to be with any members of the official organization during this bye week.
Right. You can't, in theory, have any sort of, even if the team had a skate without coaches, you're not supposed to do that, right?
Exactly.
But what's the number? Like, what if five guys get on the ice together? Is that?
I don't know. And what will be interesting, I haven't had time to make a call, but I wonder, did one of the players invite Adam Oates to come on the ice with them?
Work as an independent contractor.
Zach Parise in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Isn't he a skills consultant?
He's a skills consultant to a number of players. It's been controversial. Mm. It's been controversial because there's been an undercurrent of Oates might be telling players a message that is different than what the coaching staff is telling them. And so it never came out in Minnesota, but there was an undercurrent in Minnesota of Adam Oates was telling Parise and Suter to do things differently than Coach Mike Yeo was telling them.
Just a note here, Pat Chiaretti has just joined them as well.
Le capitaine.
So there's four guys on the ice at the Canadiens practice facility. How many guys are on the ice together before this is a practice? what's a quorum?
That's Mark Bergevin needs is the NHL.
If Carey Price shows up, you've got a quorum, right?
Because they're not allowed to practice officially until 4 p.m. on Friday with the coaching staff as a team. Which, by the way, brings me to another point. The idea that Claude Julien has all this time before their first game on Saturday. Well, he does, except that He's going to get one practice because they play Saturday afternoon. No morning skate. They have one skate on Friday. Then they play.
The other thing to me is that this idea that suddenly Claude Julien arriving is going to open the floodgates in Montreal to this, you know, because Therrien was too conservative and had too much structure and too many rules. What was the complaint about Julian in Boston? The reason Cam Neely didn't like Claude Julien in Boston was he thought he was too conservative.
Right.
So this is the fifth coach right now in season that has been fired this year. Is that alarming to see that many coaches?
No, it's usually, Kevin Gibson put out a list yesterday.
We've seen four.
I think we're usually between four and six a year.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. And if you include...
Can't make trades, so you got to fire someone.
And if you go at calendar year, say June 1st to June 1st, about a third of the coaches in the league will change.
Yeah.
In an average year.
And it's been worse, I think, in the cap era, because again, I think that it's hard to enact change trade wise.
Well, you're tied to players, absolutely. Yeah.
Is Mike Babcock the only one who's safe, given A, his contract, what he's making, and where the team is?
I think Joel Quenneville is literally good.
Is he another one you'd say is safe? Yeah.
Yeah.
I know we've talked about this before, Pierre, where you said, like, back in the day when a team was struggling, it was a little bit easier to make a trade. You shake up the room for your coach, you give him a chance, and then if he doesn't turn things around, then, okay, fine, it's the coach.
That used to be the play.
But you used to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And now it's not easy to do that. But now we're also hearing stories, and I know Columbus, who the Leafs actually play tonight, they're in Columbus to take on the Blue Jackets. We know the story broke over the weekend that they had a meeting basically telling John Tortorella to tone down his criticism of them, and now they're saying, no, we got to clamp up on letting the public know about our team meetings. But how much are we starting to hear, although Mark Bergevin said he didn't get any player input, but how much are we starting to hear of players basically saying, I don't like this guy. Tarasenko wasn't a Hitchcock fan. Like, we're starting, I don't want him, and he can just go.
Well, you know, in St. Louis's case, I don't think Doug Armstrong needed any player to talk to him. I think Doug Armstrong, I know this for a fact, could read the body language himself. But, I mean, maybe it's semantics, but there's no question there are some players on that Blues team that stopped playing for Ken Hitchcock, and Doug Armstrong could see it himself in plain sight. And I think some of that obviously happened here with Montreal and Michel Therrien.
To be fair with Columbus, from what I understand from the players that I talked to there, a meeting was called to discuss general issues. And one of the things that was brought up was the player said, hey, maybe go easier in practice and go easier. Like,
Totally normal.
This wasn't an emergency meeting call where the player group said, and listen, I mean, from what you hear in Detroit, I mean, early on in Mike Babcock's tenure in Detroit, the leadership group said, hey, like, they called a meeting and said, hey, you got to back off. I don't think the meeting was called for that reason.
No, Nick Foligno said it was a planned meeting anyway. It wasn't an emergency meeting.
So it might have come up.
And it's like Mark Bergevin meeting with a couple of the leaders last week in Arizona. He happened to run into them in the lobby and met with them. I know we got running out of time, but I feel it with social media that everything takes on a life of its own.
Right.
That even the most benign fact or occurrence, because it gets opined upon by so many different voices, which is why you like Twitter too. I mean, the social part of it, but it seems to take on a steroid aspect. I mean, everything just seems to become bigger than 20 years ago.
Here, just imagine. Go back to 1971. The Canadians win the cup and fire Al McNeil as their coach after they've won the cup, because the players essentially had an uprising against McNeil. Now drop that into the social media world.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you imagine the uproar now of a team fired their Stanley Cup winning coach because a group of players in the room didn't like him and made no bones about it?
Yeah, you'd have to picture some of the conversations we had with Mike Keenan over the years. I mean, we can be fully entertaining in a whole different...
Well, let me just say this. Mike Babcock,
you're not going to let that go,
also doesn't
that should
have
be on
anything.
HBO, I think. That's a conversation for HBO.
Babcock doesn't have anything to worry about because his star player has bought in.
I think we came out and just played the right way, played fast, just like our slogan says. So, I mean, I think when we do the right things, we're definitely a tough team to play against, and it's definitely a much better start than we've gotten the last couple of games.
Auston Matthews, future captain, already quoting the slogan.
Play fast, play right.
Play fast, play right. All right, Pierre, thanks so much for taking the time to join us in studio, my friend.
Always.
You have a very busy day. That is Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider. All right, then just, join us again tomorrow.
Have a nap.
This Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance It. Monthly payment plans for big dreams and everyday budgets. More coming up on Leafs Lunch here as you continue to listen on TSN 1050, streaming online and on the TV TSN 4. They'll rescue you from your car lease. Lease Busters. Heroic, maybe. Helpful, totally. People would love to take your car lease for your lease relief. Go to leasebusters.com as we welcome you back into Leafs Lunch. Annie Petrillo alongside Gord Miller, Dave Poulin. The Toronto Maple Leafs back in action tonight against the Columbus Blue Jackets. You can listen to it right here on TSN 1050. Pre-game at 6:30 p.m. with Jim Taddy and Patrick O'Sullivan with puck drop at 7 p.m.
Six back-to-backs, including tonight, left for the Leafs on their schedule. They have not been great in the second half of back-to-backs this year. I believe they have 3 wins in 13.
But now they have Curtis McElhinney as their backup.
You notice how she says it?
Hey, McElhinney.
So
he's in net tonight.
That's a goalie lover that she learns how to say their name.
But big
perfectly.
Start. This is a big start for
it's
him.
Pretty
tonight.
Pathetic.
This is a big start for him tonight because as much as the goaltender, you know, says it's not against the other guys and everything else, he needs to, or he wants to show John Tortorella who lost confidence.
Oh,
in
yeah.
him. Right. Like when the coach loses confidence in a goaltender, that is as big an insult.
That was strange circumstances in Columbus. I didn't understand that move bringing, you know, I realized their goalie had won the American League championship and they
Forsberg,
wanted to get him up.
And, yeah.
But it just didn't make sense.
No. So McElhinney tonight, coming off a good last start, played very well
at home,
will want to play well tonight against his former team and that coach.
Well, and especially, you know, even as Pierre was walking out and still bestowing us with pearls of wisdom, he's like, remember, you know, Jarmo Kekalainen basically said that the reason why they placed him on waivers is because he wasn't a good enough backup. He just wasn't getting the job done. And yet here he comes to this market where a lot of people are feeling he's finally become the answer to a backup situation that's been a problem with the Toronto Maple Leafs since the start of the season.
This is the tough thing about being a backup goaltender. And I've always, you know, we've talked about this before, but a couple things. Number one, when the team's playing badly, you're staying in and taking it. The starter's not coming in. Freddie Anderson, unless McElhinney gets hurt, Freddie Anderson is not coming off the bench tonight.
So this is the type of stuff that drives James Duthie crazy, and I agree with him as a host.
Parking his spot?
No. Right. I do that anyways. But when trades are happening before trade deadline day, so there is a trade. Looks like Tom Gilbert to Washington for a conditional draft pick. L.A. Tom Gilbert playing.
Gilbert wasn't playing for L.A.
Nope, he was playing in the AHL for L.A., but he's going to Washington for a conditional draft pick. So
Washington gets a depth guy. By the way, analytics have done some players a favor. Tom Gilbert would be one of them.
Yes.
He's been an analytics darling for the last few years. So it may have resuscitated his career.
Well, there you go. So there's just a trade to announce that we're starting to get some things are starting to happen. In
the
2 weeks before the trade deadline.
The biggest impact on the trade deadline could be the 4 recent coaching changes. I really do.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because you've pushed that button, right? You've pushed
and you're going to support the push of that button.
Now, because when the general manager fires a coach, assuming he hired that coach, he now has to say, okay, I was wrong. We're making a change. So you do have to back, to Dave's point, you got to back that up. You got to bolster that move. I think, but just to go back to McElhinney, I think that the hard thing for a backup goalie is, number one, when the team's playing badly, you're going to take it no matter what. So Al Montoya, you're in for 10 against the Blue Jackets. Secondly, you're going to play the second half of back-to-backs. So you're going to play behind a team that played last night, which is going to be tough. And most of your starts are going to be on the road. So here's McElhinney on the road, second half of back-to-backs, play a Columbus team that's been pistol-whipped for the last 3 days.
But this is also a good test for the Leafs as well, because we saw this before where they came out with this strong defensive game against the Dallas Stars, considering what had happened in the 2 previous games, right? A 6-5 win over Boston and then a 6-5 loss in OT to New York. They were just scrambling. Defense wasn't really good. Given what had happened against Dallas the first time, they came out, beat Dallas 3-1. It was a strong defensive game. Wouldn't say it wasn't strong defensive against St. Louis, but then there were a lot of miscues after that. So here they come up with this big 7-1 win. Let's see if you can also just keep up that consistency again and not just show that it was a one-off, right? So here it is. Yeah, and it's a big game for Mack. It's a back-to-back situation. You're on the road. It's a big game for your backup. He's taking on his former team, and you want to prove that last night wasn't a fluke and you playing a strong defensive game, and the only goal they got was off a bad call and ended up being a penalty shot.
To your point, Andy, the team with one of the best backup goalies in New York, the Rangers, and Antti Raanta, has only lost 3 games in a row once this year.
Right.
And they've only lost twice in a row, twice.
Yeah.
That's an amazing consistency with the ability to put the backup goalie into a key situation. It might not be right in that situation, but they can give their head guy, Lundqvist, a rest at the right time.
And Raanta got pulled by the concussion spotter in a game in December, and Lundqvist had to come off the bench to play. First time in 4 years Henrik Lundqvist had come on in relief.
See, we discussed that too, because we thought in that situation he should have been given time to warm up.
Right. Carey Price, I mean, the best was Dominic Hasek. When he was backing up, he wasn't wearing equipment.
That's great. Like he sneakers.
He wasn't wearing a chest protector, elbow. Like he wasn't wearing any. He didn't have a chest protector.
I am not going in, no matter what.
That is brilliant. Yeah. Don't even look down. Yeah. Here.
So, I'm not going in.
We've been shedding some praise on Josh Levo, and why not? Because it's not easy. He's gone into the lineup, hasn't really played. He's been put on the fourth line, but he's been showing so much energy. Then really, you know, last night, a 3-point night for him, a goal and two assists. Do you move him up in the lineup?
Well,
give him a shot.
He's on the power play.
Yeah, he played the power.
He's on the second power.
Yeah, saw that.
So that
Matthews
is moving
getting the
him
goal
up
there.
From that spot.
I think the bigger question is, rather, does he move up the lineup when Soshnikov's ready to go?
Is he still in the
apparently
lineup?
Apparently, Soshnikov is ready to go.
Okay, so
that kind of tells you something there.
Okay, so if he's ready and you're going with Levo, like he's gonna before you talk about moving him up, let him get his feet under him and solidify his place in the lineup. Let him hold a place in the lineup, right? Because I don't know that it's his. We played his fifth game of the year last night.
And Matt Martin was credited with playing one of the top fourth lines in the league last year.
Yeah.
And is, by the way, I think they were more their third line than their fourth line in New York. It was arguable. But that is, if you put a Josh Levo there and he can move up, and moving up in the lineup doesn't mean throughout the entire, like you don't on the second line the whole game. It means spot shift after a penalty kill.
Yeah.
It means throwing him up there with Matthews after Connor Brown has just killed a penalty. Yeah. That's the type of thing he could be very valuable at.
He played 9:48 last night. So it's not like he played, you know, the average ice time for a forward is 15 minutes. So he played 9:48.
That's a good fourth line role.
Yeah, Babcock doesn't use his fourth line. Like the Islanders last year, Matt Martin averaged over 10 minutes a game last year as a fourth line player for the Islanders. He's averaging about 2 minutes a game less than that this year. He's averaging about 8.5 for Toronto. So the fourth line doesn't get as much ice time as it might other places. So I would, if I'm Levo, you had a good night last night. You had a goal and two assists. Great. Have another good night tonight.
Have a good start. Have a good first shift.
Because in his case, he's playing every night to stay in the lineup. At this point in his career, he's playing to stay in the lineup. That's got to be his focus.
And once again, that's why I looked at Austin Matthews' first two periods last night without scoring a point as tremendous because of all those tiny little details that keep him right at the top of a coach's mind.
So he's a bad game away from being out of the lineup. He's probably, like you hate to say
sure
it, among the forwards, he's the first guy out.
Levo.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, because we were just talking Matthews. You got to ding a bell when you're going to.
Ding. But Levo is the first.
Wait a second. You fly all over the place.
Oh, my God.
Here.
Seriously, you got the attention span to fly, and you're on me? Come on.
It's
see
like
that board? Why
me.
Don't we have one of those boards that says exactly what we're going to do? Because you wouldn't even look at it. That's why we don't have one of those chalkboards.
No, you got to fly by the seat of your pants. You got to be willing to adjust in game.
You know how long he played in the league, right? You realize that the man played in the NHL for six, how many years?
13.
13 years, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you understand, he understands the concept of changing on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Let's do it on the radio now.
This is more about handling women than it is changing on the fly.
You know what? I really, at this point, I'm going to punt.
I wish I could say I felt bad, but.
I'm going to drop back and punt at this point. I'm going to kick it.
Well, this was funny. So yesterday we had Frank Cervelli on. And then, you know, so before the show, he's, what are we going to talk about? I said, I don't know. I really don't know. We're going to go out there and we're going to talk hockey.
So I'm back on tomorrow. I'm taking Freddie Anderson.
No.
And grades of the game tomorrow.
If you want to walk out of here without a limp. No.
I'm taking Freddie Anderson and grades of the game tomorrow.
Wait a second. He's not even playing.
I'm taking him anyway.
I'm
taking him anyway.
We just finished talking about Curtis McAlee.
I got Freddie Anderson tomorrow.
Freddie Anderson looked great on the bench last night.
He backed up great last night.
Yeah. That's an A. All right, we're done. Leafs back in action tonight against Columbus. That's Dave Poulin. That's Gord Miller. I'm Annie Petrillo. Thanks for tuning in. The Scott MacArthur Show's coming up next.